It's a lovely day. The sun is lighting me quite well through my window.
That's so nice, considering it was such a shit weekend.
It was raining.
The whole time. Listen, I didn't move to Los Angeles, California to experience entire weekends of rain, Shelby.
Can I tell you something?
You loved it.
I loved it.
Listen, I have no problem with rain if I have nowhere to go. Unfortunately, I had places to be this weekend, so I wasn't allowed to just like, listen, if I can stay home, freaking blinds closed, you just hear the rain and the thunder while you're like snuggled. Amazing. Yeah. You need to be outside. It's cold.
It is cold. That's true. I did get wet. Mm. But you know what? I'm warm again. So the cold was only temporary. The peace the rain gives me is forever. Mm.
Put that on a t-shirt, people.
I'm Shelby.
I'm Sam.
It's the Rom Complex.
One, two, three, four. Oh, I'll meet you at the meet cute, wearing a meat suit. That's a suit, it's made out of meat. And you, and me, me, and me, and you. Meat suit.
Rom Complex. Samantha. We are
Shelby.
Ooh, I liked it. We're closing out our month celebrating New York City.
Gross.
I don't think we really celebrated it, but
not at all.
We talked about movies set in New York City, and we're closing it out with basically 11 short films set in New York City because mm-hmm. we're talking about New York, I Love You. That's what it's called.
New York, I Hate You is what I would have called this for myself, for me.
You did not care for the film?
It's not so much the film. I just hate New York, which I have said. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. the hill I will die on. But yeah, I'm not going to lie to our beautiful listeners. I fell asleep multiple times while watching this film. So if this is like a film that you love, sorry.
Here's the thing. It is an anthology film, which mm-hmm. means each little segment has a different writer, director, different stories. There's one kind of little through line just of this lady like filming different things, but it's not really a story like really connecting these things. So it is just kind of vignettes in different parts of New York City. And whenever you have an anthology series, you're gonna get mixed results.
It's true.
There's gonna be variations in quality.
No, for sure. Especially because the way that this movie is structured is that not only are they separate stories, but they're also directed and written by different people, mm-hmm. obviously starring different actors. So there is like, unlike, what's the other one that does New Year's Eve, right? New Year's Eve takes place in New York. That's all one creative team, right? That's all like one writer, one director for all these different little stories.
Right.
This is like a little bit different. So you're right. The quality does vary. But I was also just very sleepy and it was raining outside. So
that being said, there was definitely some stuff to like about this. And some of the segments were good and some of them were baffling. And by that, I mean, some of them were like, I don't understand what happened. And then other ones are like, why? So I believe they were also like had rules on what they had to do for these stories. So I think they had to
shoot them in certain areas.
And they had to be shot in like 24 hours or something like that. It was like not a lot of time. And honestly, you can tell that's why you get these very short vignettes of things that maybe were written quickly, you know? Like, I don't know. I feel like, and I'm not necessarily hating on it. It's just you can tell when something was done quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sometimes it's a good thing. You get these cool results of a like stream of consciousness date after a one-night stand. Like, mm-hmm. you get something interesting or you get something batshit insane like our poor baby Anton Yelchin.
Oh, yeah.
So,
or the Shia LaBeouf one. I didn't really.
We'll get to it.
To it. I'm just saying it's one of the, you're right. I do appreciate the experimentation of it. I mean, I grew up doing theater. I did theater in college and everything. And there was this, like, a similar concept called, like, 24-hour theater, where they would lock a bunch of theater people in a room for 24 hours. And you'd have to write, stage, direct, like, do everything to put on a production the following day, which results may vary. But there is something really fun about, like, forcing creative people to kind of get out of their comfort zone of getting, like, you know, 3 week shoot times or 2 months. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long movies shoot for these days, but, you know, there's something nice about, like, throwing filmmakers in the wild and being like, okay, you have one day. Yeah. Figure it out. Goodbye.
Well, constraints like that can breed creativity. It's, I mean, that's why I love writing to a prompt. Like, give me a prompt to work off of. Okay, cool. I'll come up with something great, even if I was, like, had zero ideas before. But yeah, I guess we should start talking about these.
I guess.
The first segment, we've got Hayden Christensen and Rachel Bilson. So he's like a pickpocket and he's passing her. She's taking pictures in a photo booth and he, like, follows her to this bar and returns her wallet to her or something. He, like, stole her wallet or phone and then he gives it back to her. So she buys him a drink, and it's gin and tonics with no ice, which just sounds gross.
That sounds so bad. Like, ew, what are we doing? I think this is just random, but good to note that they were dating at this time.
Cute.
Hayden Christensen and Rachel Bilson, they started dating when they did that film Looper?
Jumper.
I knew it was some kind of ending movie.
Sam.
You know, an movie. So they were dating at the time, which to me, like, it doesn't really read in the chemistry, if I'm being honest with you. I'm kind of just like, what are these two people doing on screen together? Like, it doesn't.
Yeah, I'll tell you it doesn't read what the hell's going on in that segment. Because, like, this girl has a boyfriend. He's married, this married older guy. Basically, the married older guy and Hayden Christensen just start, like, pickpocketing each other back and forth.
Do you know what it reminded me of? Have you seen that episode of New Girl? When Jess is dating Robbie and she's trying to pay his medical bill because he fucking got fucked up because she kissed him. Anyway, people who know, know. If you know, you know, like J-Lo says. But she's trying to get the bill from him and she's like, well, I was in a production of The Artful Dodger. So she pickpockets him, but he pickpockets her right back. So there's a whole scene where they do it like two or three times where, like, the bill is just magically passing between these two characters. And I was like, that's what's happening here.
You know what? They got it from New York. I love you.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. They're big fans and they're going to listen to this episode and be like, someone noticed.
I got you.
Actually, the New Girl writers should listen to this podcast because they'd hear compliment after compliment from Sam. It's her favorite show.
My favorite show. Oh, yeah. I could talk for hours.
So it ends with, like, you think Hayden Christensen kind of lost or whatever. But then as he's leaving, he realizes he has, like, a different picture than he had before. And then Rachel Bilson is like, hey, wait up. Mm-hmm. And so I guess she was the ultimate pick. Did they know each other before? I don't understand. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
Makes no sense.
But I was like, maybe I just missed something. I kind of erred on the side of, like, maybe I wasn't paying enough attention.
Yeah, me too. I might have fallen asleep during that one a little bit.
So the next one we've got, we've got these little interstitial things that kind of tie these 11 stories together. So later these characters show back up and she sees him, like, rocking at basketball, but then it turns out he just, like, paid a guy to make him look good. Which, and she's like you funny. Got me. Yeah, it's cute. So the second one is about the diamond sellers. So you've got this guy, his religion is he's an Orthodox Jain diamond seller. I'm just reading it off of IMDb because Wikipedia did not have, trust me, there was one of these segments where I was like, I need to Google ending explained. I can't find it though.
Oh my God. We're twins.
I'm not ashamed. I'll Google ending explained after a movie.
I love Googling ending explained. It's like my favorite thing because then you, like, are told things that you didn't actually pick up the first day. You're like, oh, wow, okay, that was right. Well done.
Like, most of the time, it's like, I Google ending explain, and it just tells me what I already thought. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, I got it. And then Sometimes I'll Google ending explain, and it'll change my entire perspective of the movie.
That's honestly, like, those are my favorite times, if I'm being honest, when you're like, oh, wow, never even thought of that.
That happened to me with A24's The Green Knight.
Starring Dev Patel.
Starring Dev. Ooh.
Oof, listen, I saw Monkey Man over the
week. Yeah, I was just going to say him.
The part where he tears his shirt up. I was sweating in that movie theater. I was like, whew, need some alone time with Mr. Patel.
Oh, boy. Who would have thought back in 2008, I did not see this future.
Dude, on Skins, he was just the kid with the big ears. And I was like, I'll never see that man as attractive. Here we are.
So anyway, the diamond sellers. You've got this guy, he's like a diamond seller. And then Natalie Portman is an Orthodox Jewish diamond retailer. So she's like buying diamonds from this guy. They have this relationship. They've been doing this for years. You can tell. They like have this connection. We just learned through their dialogue that they have this connection. They're both like restricted in what they can eat. And they're like chatting about that. And they're both value their faith above everything else. And you could tell that they have, like, they just connect over the fact that they value the same thing so strongly. Like, even though they don't share the same faith, they value their faith in a way that, like, most people who are just either not religious or, you know, vaguely religious just will never access that level of faith, you know? Mm-hmm. And they just have this sweet little connection that gives them this moment of, like, daydreaming later, you know, where it's, like, it's not ever, like, a serious connection, but it's something to like lift their spirits. And even like the line he says to her is that like your eyes will suffice to give tired men hope. And it's just like really
what a
sweet
line. What a line.
So I thought I love that it. One was sweet. Like,
yeah, it's cute. I think it's honestly too, like I had a conversation about this kind of over the weekend about how like the crush phase, in my opinion, is like one of the best phases of like, even though they can't be together, like you said, there's still this like giddiness and like excitement that you get when you're like, oh, like, I feel so seen by this person and like I see them and like you kind of fantasize about what could, you know, what life could look like if you were together. So I think it's really sweet when you get to kind of see that level of connection where you're just kind of like, ooh, someone has a crush, Natalie Portman.
And you can tell, like, either of these characters, if they felt that it, like, got in the way of their faith, they would, like, have no problem never seeing these people again. Because, like, she's kind of sad about cutting off her hair for her wedding. But then you can tell, like, that she's happy to adhere to her faith. Like, that's what gives her joy. So
can't relate.
No, me neither.
Good for,
but it's
good
like,
for her, but can't relate.
I remember watching this movie like years and years and years ago, and I remember not liking that segment. And I think now I do like it because now I see it more like some people just value more some things more than others. And like she values her faith even above her own personal freedom. Mm-hmm. And like I just have different values than that.
Yeah. And I think it's important, too, that they're not, like, there's no expectation for either of them to, like, give up that faith.
Right.
Or give up that, like, the thing that they value above all else. And I think that's where, like, in my opinion, where you get into tricky situations with people in religion. Like, I don't care if you are a devout anything, right? They list religions here. Any religion, if you are, like, devoutly that religion, good for you. Don't put it on me, though, because I'm not that thing. You know what I mean? So, like, I like seeing the devotion in other people. It's just difficult when like some certain people
start to
try to push that onto other people.
And I think that like it's probably it's hard to say. You know, I don't like to talk bad about anyone, but we lived in Florida. In Florida, even if I was out alone as like a 11, 12 year old, strangers would come up to me and ask me if I believed in Jesus Christ, if I thought I was going to heaven. And it's just like, So we're like, we grew up seeing these like kind of really, I don't think that's the majority of like faithful people. Well, it's just like,
depends on, yeah.
I guess it depends where you are.
That's why I didn't list a specific religion. That's why I was not, like, I'm not targeting anybody. I mean, I'm just saying.
I'll say it. There are some weirdos in Florida.
Yeah. But just like this idea though, that like, you can be a faithful person in whatever religion, and that you like the joy that you take comes from your own devotion. It doesn't come from trying to convert someone else.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of devotion, we've got this next one here. The third vignette. Mm-hmm. We've got Orlando Bloom.
I love Orlando Bloom.
He's a skinny little musician, and he's trying to like make a score for something, and he's having difficulties with the director or something. And so he's been talking to the director's assistant over the phone, this woman named Camille, and she is like super devoted to him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she's helping him, answering his questions, and he is like falling in love with her over the phone because she's a woman who's willing to talk to him.
I know. Oh my God. I actually really liked this one. I thought it was cute.
I did too. No, I did too.
I love a like a pathetic little man who becomes obsessed with a woman. He is. He's Orlando Bloom and he's hot, but he's still a pathetic little man.
I agree with you because I feel like in that dynamic, you can tell she thinks he's this incredible artist.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's talented, and talent is something people like in a partner. So she's like,
oh yeah, I'm really drawn to talent.
She's obviously extremely kind and supportive. So of course he's obsessed with her. They just have this cute little thing and they fall for each other.
Mm-hmm.
She gives him these books to read because the director wanted him to read some Dostoevsky. And then he's clearly having a really, really hard time. He calls her, leaves a message. She's like, I quit. I can't do it. And so she literally shows up at his door and like offers to read the books to him. And he opens the door and it's Christina Ricci.
It's freaking Christina Ricci, dude. Which I thought was so funny. I also love the fact, this is the part that I also thought was hilarious, was that he was trying to figure out what she looked like. He was like looking on the internet. And this is like still early, the early 2000s. So it's like, the internet barely existed, but he was like trying to, like, I don't know, going through like photos that she had sent him, but she like covers her face in all of them or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he's like also trying to figure out what she looks like. And I just think it's so funny because he literally like fell in love over the phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then when he finally does see her in real life, he's like, does this mean we're getting married?
Yeah.
It's just so cute.
It is really cute because the story she tells is about Dostoevsky writing The Gambler, and he had agreed to do it in like 26 days or something. And he was like, fuck, I can't do this. So he had a stenographer come and like dictate or type everything for him, whatever. And then they later got married. So like when she tells him that and then shows at the door and then he's like, it's just me, we're going to get married. It's so cute.
Yeah.
I think they should get married.
That was the first one that I was like, okay, I'm in.
You're in.
Yeah, that was the first one in the movie that I was like, okay, I'm invested.
So the next one, we've got hot people flirting. The hot people flirting in New York. We're outside. Bradley Cooper and Maggie Q share a cigarette flame.
It's not Bradley Cooper.
That one's not Bradley Cooper?
No. No, Bradley Cooper is the one with the girl from The Sopranos.
Oh,
this
you're
one
right,
is
right.
Ethan Hawke.
That's it. Ethan Hawke. A different skinny man.
A different skinny white man. Yeah.
Ethan Hawke. He lights this lady's cigarette. She's hot as hell. She's like, you know, just like, thanks, whatever. And he's like, oh, I got to talk to this lady. He's like talking her up, chatting her up. Wasn't that so intimate, that moment we just shared together? He's basically talking her into, like, he keeps talking to her, thinking he's making this like deeper connection with her while she's just like kind of letting him go. And at first I was like, do they know each other? Because why would she just let him talk to her like this?
Yeah.
Because I thought it was going to be revealed that they like knew each other and they were like married or something. But no, she is just kind of letting him make a fool of himself, basically. And then while he's like, oh, I'm so amazing at sex. We can go have sex right now. Like, my apartment's over there, blah, blah, blah. And then she basically is like, hey, I'm a sex worker, and hands him her card. And yeah.
She's a call girl, according to the IMDb. That's what they called them back in 2008
or whatever. Yeah.
Six? Eight? Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever year this movie came out. Yeah, he did say something during that whole back and forth that I was like, it was interesting, but I didn't write it down. But he essentially was like, to that point of like sharing an intimate moment, he was like, don't you want to see where this goes or something like that? And I just thought that struck me as like interesting, because as someone who is perpetually avoiding connection, it's like when the opportunity actually arises, it's like, when will you identify if it's a connection worth exploring, right? Because it's very clear that, like, I don't know, he was being a little too aggressive for my personal taste. So I probably would have been like her, being like, no, I'm cool, thanks, bye, like, I'm gonna go inside. But it's like, when you have a moment like that, when do you just like, how do you know if this is something where you're like, yeah, this is a person that I feel drawn to and I want to be connected to them. And I will talk about that with my therapist at some point.
Yeah. You don't know ahead of time.
No.
You just have to know your personal boundaries and like what you want. And if something is different than that, then you back out the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that I'm one to talk. So anyway, the next one. This one is insane. So this one's got Anton Yelkin. Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
I know. R.I.P.
Rest in peace. He's like, got dumped by his girlfriend just before prom. The local pharmacist, I think he's like a delivery boy. And the local pharmacist is like, hey, you're a great boy. Why don't you take my daughter to prom? And Anton is like, yeah, I'll take your daughter to prom. She looks hot as hell. He shows like a little headshot of her. They go to pick her up. The daughter's in a wheelchair. Oh, no. He's at first like,
She's ruined.
Please cut out the disgusting coughing into the microphone.
No, it adds to the ambiance. So he is like, oh, shit, she's in a wheelchair.
Yeah. But then immediately they get to the school and everyone is so mean to her, like insanely mean to her. And she just plays it off. She's like, whatever. People are asking about it. And she's like, oh, I'm a Make-A-Wish. I'm here for Make-A-Wish. So she's just like, not like, who? What is her personality? We do not know.
Her personality is wheelchair. Shelby, keep up.
So then they go back through the park. I mean, some people like steal their limo. It's really messed up. They go back through Central Park and sit on this bench, and she's just like, let's have sex. Well, she doesn't even say anything. She just takes a belt and like puts it over a tree branch and hoists herself into the air so that he can fuck her. And then they go back home. Or no, they fall asleep there.
They fall asleep in the park, so they have the sex. She's hanging from the tree.
She's not saying anything during this. Like, we don't know what she's thinking.
Yeah. She essentially just like, she puts the belt over the tree branch or whatever and holds herself up. And she's like, take off my panties. Yeah. I hate that word. I hate it so much. But panties. Anyway.
Panties.
Yeah. I think if you hit the T too hard, it's an extra gross word to my brain.
Panties.
Like panties. Like panties. Like panties is fine, but panties, anyway, that's besides the point. And she's like, you know, just directing him, like, it's not even a conversation of like, oh, it's prom night, maybe we should have sex, none of that.
No,
like hoists herself up and is like, take off my panties, you take off your pants, let's fucking go. And they have sex and they fall asleep.
They wake up, he runs her home in the wheelchair. They get to the thing. He thinks that the dad is going to be so mad. He comes out. The dad's just complaining about like a sports team. The girl then gets up out of her wheelchair and walks inside. It turns out she's an actress. And
so
she's a method actress. And she's a method actress. And she's playing a girl in a wheelchair. So she has to fuck high schoolers every week.
Dude,
I don't understand. Sam,
no.
What?
This one, I was like, huh? What? Like, what is going on? And then it goes into this like little VO thing with Anton, whatever his name is,
where
he's just like, there are 2,000 blah 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 method actresses in New York. I don't know. He does like math at the end of it. And I'm like, why?
It's bad. It's bad. It's nonsensical. And it's supposed to be this story of this kid losing his virginity, which, you know, I hate a fucking virginity tale.
Yeah, we hate a virginity tale.
And he goes back to the bench and there are more belts hanging from the tree. So, like, how many times has she done this? How old is she? What is the...
She's a witch. She's harnessing their power.
Some of the branches
to be a better actress.
Really high up. How did she get up there?
This is one of the ones that was extra confusing for me because, again, I fell asleep for a little bit. And then when I woke up, it was just them at prom. It was like from prom. So I didn't get the intro bit of him talking to the dad or whatever. I thought they were just like dating. Like, I just thought they were like together. So I was like, oh, wait, that's kind of sweet. Like, she's making accommodations so they can have sex on prom night. I don't know. I was just like, oh, okay, like high school sweethearts. Whatever.
It turns out the reason I have to remember the plot of every movie is because Sam sleeps through half of them.
I don't sleep through most of them, just this one. So I was just kind of like extra confused, but it is regardless of me not being there for the first like 3 minutes, it was confusing. Made no sense.
It was
straight to jail.
Disturbing. Yeah, I think that they should be locked up for that one. The next
one. Obviously not Anton, but.
No. Well, no, not the actors. Just the people who wrote it.
Maybe the actors, too.
So the next one is the one, the stream of consciousness one that I liked. You've got
Bradley Cooper
and Lady.
The actress from The Sopranos.
Drea Di Matteo. She's.
Yes.
They're like. On their way to meet each other after, and while they're doing it, you can hear their inner monologue. And I think it's pretty decently written stuff, like just based on the amount of stream of consciousness things I had to read in literature school. So the way that they would be thinking in like words, you know, but then it would flash to like images of them having sex the first time. And it would just be like a curve of back and like sweat running down something. And it's like, yes, like that is so sexy. And they're both like, oh, I shouldn't go to this. Like we didn't have anything in common. Like that's why we... Mm-hmm. You know, opened up to each other so quickly and it was such a strong connection. And then they get there. He's like about to get in a taxi and leave after walking 30 blocks there. And that's right when she walks up. And then instead of going on their date, they get in the cab and make out.
And go
home together.
Listen, we all knew why both of you were showing up here.
Right.
Like, let's not pretend it's anything other than that. And it's allowed to be just that. And that's fine. I support this.
Exactly.
I really loved, too, that Bradley's character, like, so Bradley actually got to the bar that they were meeting at. He got there way before her, right? And so you see him kind of in there talking to, like, another woman, talking to the bartender, like, taking a shit ton of, like, I think he was drinking Jameson or something, and he was, like, taking shots of it to kind of, like, calm himself down. And so you can tell that he had been there for a bit before he decided, you know what, I'm just gonna leave. And even when he gets to the cab, like he goes to get in and then he gets out and he like has a minute and he's like, wait, should I do this? You can see the struggle. And then you see the moment where he senses that she has just walked up. And so when he turns to look at her, like you said, they just immediately get into the cab and leave. And I was like, hell yeah. Like fate really worked out on this one. Because he could have left and it would have been a missed connection, you know?
Right. It's cute. I mean, like, the way that they're all, like, second-guessing themselves, like, not looking for anything serious, you know? And that doesn't matter. Like, you can still, like, connections with people can be brief. it's fine. You can still have the treat of,
a
like,
two-night stand
the good
is
part.
Fine.
Yeah. I just liked the way that it was shot to really amp up the whole internal, like you're existing inside these characters' minds. I thought that one was nice. Anyway. Yeah,
I liked that one.
The next one, this is the one I Googled ending explain. I don't understand what happened.
Is this the Shia LaBeouf one?
Yeah. You've got this lady. She's a retired opera diva, which I mean, well, okay. Mm-hmm. And she's at this hotel, I guess, where she stayed before. And she is talking to a bellhop played by Shia LaBeouf with like a Russian accent or something. And she's...
Yeah, Russian Shia LaBeouf.
She's talking to this guy and they're talking about how sad they both are. And then he falls out the... She's like about to jump out the window. And then instead he falls out the window. But then...
Yeah.
He's not there, and instead there's an old man who's like a different hotel guy who's like, do you want me to close this window? And she's like, yeah. And I had no idea what happened.
Was Google fruitful at all or no?
No.
Because I do have some thoughts, but...
The IMDb description, this is where, I mean, it gave me some information because this one says... She's returned to a hotel where she stayed many times and where she has strong memories of encounters with a young bellhop. So I guess they were memories like that happened in the past.
So here's what I think. This is what I think the story was. I think the old lady comes to that hotel like ready to die. She's going to that hotel specifically because it maybe holds fond memories for her. And it's like a place where she feels comfort. And so she wants to... end her life there, right? And so she gets there because she's in this like white, like she gets changed into this white dress, which I'm assuming it looks like a wedding dress to me, because she also asks for the purple violets that Shia LaBeouf brings. So I do think that Shia LaBeouf isn't an actual real life character. I do think he's kind of like a memory, or I don't want to say hallucination because I don't think she's hallucinating, but I think as part of her way of coping with the decision to jump out of a window, she is maybe reliving a conversation with someone who she also had like the same, like she had a connection with because they had the same kind of sadness. And before, because like when she goes to open the window, she's alone, but then he comes back, right? And that's when they have that conversation. So I think that conversation is kind of like her mind starting to rationalize that she's actually not going to do this. And so having Shia LaBeouf character fall out of the window.
It takes the place for her to like see. Her.
Right.
Right.
It's like the we were, you know, like because he's not actually there. Because when the other concierge guy comes out, he's like, oh, yeah, there's nothing down there. So like Shia LaBeouf's character isn't a real person in this universe, but somehow like fulfills something for her that she decides that she doesn't want to end her life, that she wants to keep living.
Yeah, she seems so lively at the end.
Yeah, so happy to be alive.
Because one of the things that the Shia LaBeouf character says is like all the pain, how can you bear it? Like, how can you bear it? It's just such a, I don't know. I feel like this story was just painful for no reason.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm not saying that this was good at all, but that's kind of what I kind of was able to, that's what I kind of thought it meant or what it was trying to say. I think all of the stories in this movie are not necessarily about like love. It's like for love and hatred of New York is what the IMDb thing said, like the overall synopsis. And so I think that's supposed to equate like the pain of memories, the pain of New York and how you keep on living.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, what a nice way to showcase New York from entirely inside a hotel room.
Yeah.
That's
Well, the hotel was stunning, I'll have to say.
Totally.
I also thought it was really fucked up because the Shia LaBeouf character has like a limp.
Yeah.
And he was carrying bags up the stairs. I was like, that's fucked up that they got him doing that shit. This was obviously before I realized he's not a real person.
He wasn't a real person. So the next one was actually written and directed by Natalie Portman. This one is about the guy. So it's like a guy and his kid. Well, I guess you don't know that until later, but it's like, it's a guy hanging out with a kid. So it's like a brown guy and a white looking little kid. So it mean, when I was watching it, I'm like, this was lost on me because I'm like, oh, it's like a guy and his little girl. But
yeah.
So like he's hanging out with his little kid. Clearly, they have a great relationship. Some idiot white ladies at the park are like, oh, you're such a great Manny. Like, you're so great with her. And you can see the look on his face is like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But he's just like, oh, thanks. And then he goes and, like, gives the kid back to the mom. And the mom's being, you know, whatever. And you can see that he just has a lot of pain over this relationship because people look at him and don't see that that's his kid. And then later it cuts to him. He's a dancer and he's dancing and he's so good at dancing. And from the audience, you can hear the little kid being like, daddy, yay. So like, it's not confirmed that that's his kid until then. But it's like so clear from the beginning that that's his kid that it just, I don't know. I think it's like oh yeah, it makes sense. It's like a newer writer director.
Natalie Portman. Apparently, Scarlett Johansson also wrote and directed something for this movie, but it was cut.
It was cut. Yeah, that and another one cut. Mm-hmm. Apparently, audiences found them unfavorable.
Yeah. I mean, this one felt a little.
It was fine. I thought it was okay.
Bland. Like, yeah. It was. Yeah. It was fine. I mean, I think they could have done more to kind of drive it, I don't know, to drive the sentiment home a little bit more. There could have, I feel like they could have done more to make this, like, read a little bit better, but what do I know?
Maybe it's a weird story for Natalie Portman to tell. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
That's so funny. You're so right, because, again, my brain forgot that Natalie Portman wrote it. Yeah, kind of a weird little story, babe. Maybe that wasn't for you.
But not necessarily. I mean, I don't think it's definitely not the worst one in here. So
it's definitely not. But I think maybe if they had framed the story from the daughter's point of view, it could have been a little more like true. Because like I know that Natalie Portman isn't like mixed race or anything. She's squarely white. But at the very least, it was like from the point of view of a white girl. And then you can see like the microaggressions or like the external stuff going on. And as us as adults and as viewers can pinpoint and see what's going on, but the little girl can't, you know what I mean? So maybe that would have been a better use of this little vignette.
Yeah. I don't know. But then it was nice to have, and it was like, just the way that it just like cut to him dancing at the end, it's just like, okay, well, was there a story here? Or like, if there wasn't a story, it's just kind of exploring. It was, I guess, too slice of lifey for, it I missed on what I was trying to do. I don't always hate it.
I hate slice of life. No, you're like, I hate give it 99% give me of the time.
Plot.
I want a plot. I want it to be really thought out. Like, I want a beginning, middle, and an end. Like, don't give me a piece of the middle. Anyway, what's the next one? Is the next one the artist guy?
Yeah. So it's this like Eastern European artist guy. He becomes obsessed with this like beautiful girl who's this Chinese herbalist. Mm-hmm. And she like sells him, or like he buys stuff from her or whatever. And he, I don't know, he's painting her all the time. And he like begs her to come and sit for him because he's like, I need to paint you. Mm-hmm. He's just like really into it. And she is like, no, I can't. She's like really shy. Also, this is like a stranger. You can't just abduct a young woman and have her be like,
no.
And it's funny because that character was in a cab earlier, and like the cabbie was like, you're an artist, huh? A painter. And it's like, oh, you could just tell from looking at someone that they're a painter. Okay.
Yeah. He saw the paint on his hands.
Oh,
Shelby.
Maybe.
That's what he said. He's like, I see the paint on your hands.
Oh,
you're an artist.
That makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought he just guessed.
That I did catch. That I was not asleep for.
I guess I was. So the girl eventually, she's like, you know what? I'm going to sneak away from work and go find him. She goes and he has passed away, the man.
Yeah.
So she does not get to be painted.
It's not funny.
He is no longer with us. And like his landlord is like clearing out all of his old paintings and stuff. She sees like paintings of her hanging on the wall, like unfinished. Mm-hmm. He never filled in the eyes or anything. And he painted her. The paintings are super cool,
I'm not going to
lie. Yeah, they are cool.
Yeah.
And she takes one of the paintings and then she like takes a little selfie of herself and then cuts out her eyes and puts them where like the eyes aren't filled in. So she like adds to the art and it, I guess it makes her feel better. I thought this one was kind of cute.
It was kind of cute. I agree. Cause then she ends up meeting, cause there's a woman that I don't think we've talked about this lady yet. Cause I don't know if her story has hit yet, but there's this woman just like documenting New York on her video on her camera.
She's like the connective tissue of the movie. Just
right.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, like she sees this woman filming her essentially out in public and she approaches her and that's where she does the whole like taking a picture and then cutting out the eyes thing. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next one, once again, we've got a man and a woman talking to each other outside over lit cigarettes. Because like this lady comes up and there's a guy on the phone and she asks him for a light and he lights. And once again, so yeah, again, we have a couple talking outside. Once again, I was like, do they know each other? Because they're talking in this way where she's like, you know, oh, you're intrigued by me because I'm a stranger. And he's like, oh, okay. And I'm like, this just seems like a husband and wife doing a bit. And it becomes quite serious. You know, she gets kind of upset and she says like, she's sad because she's going to go back inside and sit down in front of her husband. And he's like, not even going to look at her. And the guy is like, well, your husband is, I feel bad for your, you know, stupid, lonely husband, you know, who can't see his wife's talents. And then she goes back inside and then it's revealed.
Is this
that
the girl from the Bradley Cooper vignette too?
No.
Doesn't she come back?
Yes.
Well, no, she comes back with the pharmacist guy where she gets mad at him.
Yes. The call girl comes back in like a laundromat. And this guy from this vignette is like is in that one. He's there in the laundromat. And then we see his story. It. Yeah. So it's just like one of those little connecting things. So this guy, anyway, these couples are talking outside. They're doing their little bit. They come back inside. They are a married couple this time. Yes, they did know each other. And then because they had their little playtime, their little
role play time. Yeah.
They now are like talking and laughing like they haven't in years.
Wow. All you need is a little role play to spice it up.
A little.
And love will bloom.
A little play time.
Get a sandbox. Have some play time.
Exactly.
Is the next one the old couple? Because I love them.
The next and final one is an elderly couple. They are celebrating their 63rd wedding anniversary by like walking across this one part of town. I don't ask me where it is. I don't know New York.
No, me neither. But I just love them so much because that's what I aspire to be as an old couple. Just like picking on each other about the stupidest shit.
This one ended with a bang because I think you can tell this one was written by someone who like knew what they were doing because I mean, it does read a little bit like a play, which in this case, it works perfectly because all they're doing is having these two characters walk through New York, which they're supposed to be showcasing New York, these two characters, and they're showing how in love they are in this very silly way through like, the way they're bickering at each other. She's telling him, pick up your feet when you're walking, you're shuffling. He's like, I'm not shuffling, I'm picking up my feet.
Yeah. She's like, hurry up, it's going to take us 3 years to get there.
You can tell they fucking love it. They love it. They would not trade it for the world. And they talk about like their daughter, you know, and they're like sending, or like she calls and...
Is this actor the same actor from The Holiday? Like the little old man that, what's her name, becomes friends with in L.A.? Because I know the woman is Cloris Leachman.
Yes, that is him. Eli Wallach.
He's from The Holiday?
Yep.
Oh my God, I love this. Okay, I love them because they're also married in real life. Or they were. This was a long time ago. Yeah, they're actually married, according to the trivia on IMDb.
Well, okay, I read that on the trivia, but it was unclear if it meant them or if it meant the characters.
No, I'm pretty sure it said the actors are married, but I could be wrong.
Because that's what I thought it said, but then I read it again. I'm like, I think they just did the math and said in 2008, the 63rd wedding anniversary means they would have been married in this year. But I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm just...
I'm choosing to believe that they were actually married.
Okay.
No, yeah. It says Abe and Mitzi. Oh, I get what you're saying. Oh, yeah. I think it is the characters. Abe and Mitzi were married in 1945.
There's an easier way to look that up.
No, yeah, of course there is, but we're not going to do it. I also thought that it was interesting that the runtime for this movie is 143 minutes, which goes out to 143.
Which means I love you. I love you.
Yeah. Cute. That's cute. That's the kind of stupid shit I would do if I made movies. I'd be like, we have to make sure it's 143 minutes.
Yeah. So this last one, again, I think it was just like really the perfect way to showcase this area, which is what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And the actors killed it. Love to hear it. The actors who are not married to each other.
Did you check?
Yeah.
LOL.
And that's how it closes out. I mean, it closes out with that one. We've got, you know, the rest of the sort of vignettes coming through. Everyone's like, you know, crossing paths now and mm-hmm. stuff. And bam, it's New York. Overall, I don't know how I feel about this movie. Like, mm-hmm. I never intended to watch it again after I watched it the first time.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of glad I watched it a second time because I think I got more out of it this time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was the first time I've ever seen it. So, yeah, I mean, it's fine. I probably won't watch it again.
It's part of a kind of trilogy. So the first one was about Paris.
Yeah, Paris Je T'aime.
Yeah, and then there's another one.
Oh, there is?
I think there
I
might
didn't
be
know
a
about the third
Berlin one.
Berlin, I love you. In German, obviously.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, and Rio. There's another one.
Oh,
Rio.
There's four.
Yeah, I guess so. Interesting.
Do they also go with the same concept of like
yeah,
giving the directors
of them are
a
anthologies.
Short?
Yeah, I believe so.
I mean, I think that's kind of fun. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
and like you
totally.
Said, the quality will vary, but I think it's interesting to kind of see what these people can come up with. Yeah, I'll probably never watch it again, but.
Yeah. I could be convinced to watch the other ones. I think I watched Paris Je T'aime, but I haven't seen the other ones. Mm. So who knows?
I've never been to Paris, so I can't watch it. I don't have a frame of reference.
Well, yeah, I haven't been to Paris. There was a while where I was just watching a bunch of French rom-coms on Netflix. Like they had like a large selection.
Like so in French?
With subtitles. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so funny. I love that for you.
Thank y'all.
I watched a French version of Cruel Intentions on Netflix.
Hello.
Yeah, which, wild. But yeah, I think overall, I think my favorite stories in this movie were the old couple, obviously.
Yeah. Because
I just love
yeah.
watching little old people in love. I think it's so cute.
That one was really good.
And I really liked the Orlando Bloom. And I had one more, but I can't remember it now. Oh, well. Oh, I like the Bradley Cooper one. I thought it was interesting. I was confused because I was like, what are we going? Because it's so stylistically different from the other vignettes that I was
yeah.
like, did I miss something? Or like, is this the vibe? And then
yeah,
I realized
yeah,
it was
yeah.
the vibe. And I was like, okay.
That was the vibe, which is like, if for a short thing like that, mm-hmm. I can handle that vibe.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't think it works as well for like an extended
like a
thing.
Feature. Yeah.
But there is like the director, Terrence Malick. That's what every one of his movies is like.
Mm.
And he's like an acclaimed director. I'm convinced there is a movie of his that I would like, but I have not watched it yet. So anyway.
Yeah.
We've discussed it.
We
New
did
York.
It.
Who our next city for next month will be. We don't know yet.
We don't know yet.
So
it'll be a surprise for you and a surprise for us.
I have an idea.
What?
I'm going to Vegas at the end of the month. So maybe we should do Vegas for May.
Ooh, do you think there's enough Vegas
yes.
locale movies?
Absolutely.
What Happens in Vegas starring Ashton Kutcher and
yes.
Cameron Diaz.
We'll do Vegas month.
Hell yeah. Let's go to Vegas for your birthday month.
Yay. Okay.
So no surprise. It's Vegas, guys.
So
we're going to Vegas next month.
If you want to keep up to date on all the latest RomComplex stuff, go ahead and follow us on social media at The RomComplex on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, those things, you know.
All of them. Yeah, for sure. You can also send us an email. Do you want to pick our city after Vegas? Well, if you send us an email, we might actually listen to you because we never get emails. So email us, theromcomplex@gmail.com.
If you would like to support us even further, and get bonus content in the process, head on over to patreon.com/theromcomplex. We have mini episodes every week. Sam does tarot readings every week. And if you're a $10 patron, we will say your name on the podcast. Ooh, get ready to have your name heard, $10 patrons. That's right, Alex AWOL, darlinghomebody.com, Nicole J, HPG, J Train, Choo Choo, Catherine W.
And most of all, remember to keep falling in love
with yourselves.
Goodbye. Bye.